Okay, we're on the ring one, eighth shield, still strand six, because this whole series here that we did at Manzanita has been basically strand six. So we've gone one layer into strand six. So I want you to imagine, what is it, the eighth layer of strand six? The richness of this. So, okay, so here I go. The northeast shield is the shield of awareness. It's the shield of what an occupational therapist might call sensory integration. It's the place where all of our neural pathways end and intersect within our consciousness. I have a strong belief around this, and I believe that our ability to tell stories with all of our sensory memory is also our access to sensory integration control. So it's like if there was a thermostat for our senses, if you want to call it that, you know, turn up the sound, you know, like a control panel, I would say that you regulate it through your ability to recall things. And when I say recall, I really mean relive. So if I was going to quote a great storyteller and musician named B.B. King, he says there's a lot of good stories in the music. It isn't just words and notes. There's good stories in there. So when he plays them or performs them, he relives them because they're worth reliving. And he's talking about an instinct to regulate our power to connect with others. But it's also a regulation of our nervous system. So I tell people that the Northeast Shield represents all that gives us the excuse to turn on all our senses at the same time. So think about that for a second. The oldest story that I heard in the Kalahari, the shortest story that achieves this, is a story that you'll all remember after one telling. A long time ago, the lions ate a lot of us. They ate a lot of us. That's the whole story. So if you went outside now after hearing that and you saw a lion track on the ground, you're not just going to look at it. Tom Brown would say, don't look at it, look at it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Just don't look, you have to look. Like, what are you trying to tell me? You know, I have no idea what you're saying. You just, your eyes look at the sunset, but you just look at it. I want you to look at it. It's hard to articulate what I'm talking about. But if you heard that story in the Kalahari from that beautiful elder Hanuma, who's now an ancestor, you heard him telling that story, and you see how he looks in every child's eyes when he's telling that story. He smiles with so much love, right? And the next day, those children are looking at African lion tracks on the ground. You know, it's a big deal when we see a mountain lion track. How about 15 African lion tracks going in the same direction from 2 hours ago? And where do you sleep? On the ground. There's no chain link fence, there's no hard walled building, there's no thing that goes like this. Chick, chick, kr. You don't get that. They don't have rifles. They don't even have spears, really. Some of the men hold a spear, most of them don't. How do they pull this off? How do they not end up as mortality statistics? This is when what Tom is saying gets real. This is when it gets real. It's like, don't look at that lion track. Look at it. Right? There's an embodied feeling. Look. Do you see that? Right? Hey, look, a lion track. No, look. And the little children in the Kalahari, they're looking at these tracks with each other, and they're looking at each other. And then they're looking at the tracks and they're looking at each other. There's so much conveyed without words. And then they're doing this. Right? They're awake. All their senses are activated. they're paying attention at a high level, such that when a bird alarm goes off, there's 19 little children in the Kalahari that are at my feet. I'm interviewing their moms about bird language, but I can't stop paying attention to the fact that a bird alarm goes off to my right and all the children's heads turn in unison and look directly in that direction. And then I look at the mothers to see if they're looking over there. But they've already looked at their children looking in that direction, and they've already told the children with their eyes that, yes, that's an alarm, but no, you don't have to worry. All with eye contact, right? They're paying attention. What gives us the excuse to pay attention with all of our senses? And I think there's two ways we can approach this. We can approach this in two ways. If you are looking at the Ring One experience, if someone is brand new to an experience and you want them to utilize all their senses, what do you do? Well, I'll tell you what is a waste of time is to tell them to use all their senses, because it doesn't do anything. I can talk until I'm blue in the face about the neurological positives of actually using all your senses, and people can fill notebooks with information and then walk out the door and not use their senses. And I can watch them walk thinking as they walk the whole time and not pay attention to anything going on around them. Right? You know what I'm talking about? So it doesn't seem to help to explain why it's a good idea. So you have to create the need for them to pay attention. You need to create the need to help people pay attention. My most successful ventures in doing that have taken place in Alaska, along the Teklinika River in Denali National Park, in soft-walled tents in grizzly country. The first thing we did, and I didn't know this was coming, I had no idea this was going to happen, but the rangers made us, because we were tent camping in this particular zone, you have to watch footage of a grizzly bear attack on a human being. You have to watch that. Well, then you get to camp and everyone's in a really different mood. Like, they were all excited to come on this trip because we were gonna track wolves in this beautiful picturesque place together. And now everybody's really feeling differently about their choice, including me, right? And it becomes really obvious when you take that metal bar and you go, and you open this thing, and you walk in and you put anything that smells remotely like food in there, and then you close it with this loud clinking and clanking sound, and you realize that it's built for one reason and one reason only. And then you look at your tent. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting with all these adults who just a few weeks ago down in Washington State, when I was teaching art and mentoring to them, we're writing everything down about sensory acuity but not doing anything with it. All of a sudden, a sparrow alarm, the subtlest sparrow alarm to my right, and everybody goes. And then a ground squirrel alarm. Right? I'm like, oh, that's all we needed to do. See? Really, the most potent part of the Northeast Shield at the entry level is reserved for the children. And it's as simple as a long time ago. The lions ate a lot of us. They ate a lot of us. That's it. That's all Hanuma had to do with those children. That's all he had to do. Now they're paying attention. Once they're paying attention, that's when the fun really begins, because as soon as you begin to develop these relationships through your ears, through your eyes, through your gut feeling, you start to see all kinds of things and learn all kinds of things. You know, so, you know, one day we were walking, there was these four young lions, they were young males, and they were described to me as in a mischievous mood, which I'm not sure what that means, you know, but we were having some coffee in the morning and these four lions walked right past us and looked at us for a second as they walked by and kept on walking. And I'm just like, well, I'm really glad that you guys are just walking by. And they were very young, their manes weren't full yet, but man, these are big animals, you know? And they're just so full of power and electricity. And you're just like, whoa, this is so cool. And I'm really glad I can run over there and get in that building if I need to, right? So the next thing I know, we're out on the landscape. And the lions were last seen going in that direction. And we drive in that direction. And we go past where the lions clearly are walking. Because if you're timing it in your head, which I was, basically I was letting the lion walking thing play out as a movie in my head, because I'm trying to track those guys. I don't want to like run into them with a group of people that I'm responsible for, right? So we go way out ahead of them, and we're about maybe 20 minutes driving down the sand road, and we turn to the left, and I'm realizing we are directly in the trajectory of where they were walking when I saw them this morning. We park the car, we all get out of the car. There's a little bit of body language in the lodge manager that I haven't seen in all the years I've been there. For instance, he's got a rifle on his shoulder. He's never had a rifle on his shoulder when we're out with the Bushmen. I'm like, man, a guy's got a rifle on his shoulder, you know? So I think he's having the same thought I am, right? And he's looking around nervously. And he keeps going over to the truck and talking on his radio and then coming back, you know, so in a way that we can't see. But that's obvious enough, right? So I'm watching the Bushmen, and they're digging roots. These two women are just digging and digging at this root. And it's kind of getting hot, and there's these three elders, Hanuma, Du, and Gutta, are all in a row in that squat when they're all the way down with their knees up, you know, right down against the ground. And they've tucked themselves into the tiniest little shadows of these little bushes, right? You wouldn't see them if you walk by. You just wouldn't notice them because the sand is glaring, but they're in the shadow, right? But the three of them are sitting there, and they're watching me. And I can feel them watching me, but I'm watching these women dig, and I keep looking over to my left where the lions clearly are coming from. And all of a sudden, the pied babblers go off. And these are birds that are like jays, and they move in these groups, and they're white and black, and they're about the size of a jay, and they're all flying in a group. And 2 years ago, I'm in the Kalahari doing a two-week research project with the Bushmen, interviewing them daily about bird language and trying to understand how much bird language they actually know. I want to know what they know. I don't necessarily want to learn it for myself. I just want to know what they know. You know, how developed is their bird language knowledge? So they're explaining to me 2 years ago that the pied babbler is the bird that tells us when a lion is on the move during the day. So in the direction where the lions are clearly coming from, the pied babblers are now sounding off in this intense way. And I'm looking at the babblers, I'm looking at the guide with the rifle on his shoulder, I'm looking at the Bushman, and I'm like, wake up, Bushman. Clearly there's a lion coming, and you're all just relaxed and digging. Like, you guys have lost their edge for sure. You know, like I'm having all these really great thoughts. And the old man says to the guide, what's John so worried about, they said. And I said, you told me that the pied babblers were the ones who tell you when the lion's on the move in the day. They're going off right now. The lions are over there. I'm explaining the whole thing to the Bushmen. I'm like, why aren't you guys worried about this? And they laughed at me. And all three of those men did this with their hand while they talked to me. And they said, the pied babbler is our friend. He will tell us when there's danger. And I said, well, what are they telling you right now? Oh, that's just noise between them. That's pied babbler business. They will tell us when there's danger. Again, repeating this. Okay? I pulled that apart later with them. They were talking about this feeling that they get right here that tells them when there's a reason to be concerned. That the babbler sees the lion and says something that they recognize right here that is a direct message to them. That you have to be worried about, they said, right? And they demonstrate it over and over again. And, you know, I know this too from my own life, and you probably do too. When a robin family is upset because a raven is coming close to the nest, they let you know in no uncertain terms that there's real danger for their family, and you feel it right here, literally. You feel it. I don't know about you, I cannot ignore it. When there's a nest robber near a robin's nest, they are so intense with not only their vocalization, but my body vibrates sympathetically with exactly what they're feeling. I have to go out and see what's going on. I can't ignore it, you know? This is your sensory capacity coming home to roost inside of you, right? This is you using your ears for what they're designed for. You using that nerve bed for what it's designed for. It's you awakening your senses in the way they were designed. And as my friend Kathleen likes to say, in occupational therapy, they teach you the first order of priority in the nervous system is survival. Everything the nervous system does is for survival first and foremost. What's the heritage of our survival need? What is it? It's that lion story. That's it. These are our ancestors. This is what we're designed for. That's what our ears are for. This is what our sense of vision is for. Not just to find things that we want, but to detect things that we need to pay attention to. So we learn to use our peripheral vision. We learn to use our ears and to listen to the quietest sound in the four directions. And that's how I was trained, to let my ears go way out, stretch my ears in all directions and all above and down into the earth and learn to listen to all these soundscapes at once. And then if something happens out there, my body has access to it and knows. It's a way of creating ropes with your landscape. So learning to read the bird and animal language comes along with this. You know, you figure it out. You don't have to study it. You know it already. It's hardwired into you. But activate that, and you'll activate your neurology at a whole nother level. You know, so when I was out with the Bushmen women, I'll give you an example, 2 years prior to the story that I just told, the Bushmen women were out gathering something called marama beans. And these marama beans grow from, basically, it's kind of like, you ever seen pumpkins growing in the wild or, you know, wild squashes? They come up from one central point and then some runners go in each direction. So the marama beans are doing the same thing. There's a central point and there's runners going along the ground in each direction. And on any marama bean patch, which might be, you know, 10 by 10 in size, there might be 3 or 4 viable husks of marama beans. So there is no point for the women to move together. So what happens is they get out onto the Kalahari during that marama bean gathering season, and they spread out from each other, and they're aware of where each other is, but they're not right up on each other, and they're not talking to each other. They're being really quiet, and they're gathering quietly and putting these beans in their bag. So what I'm doing is I'm going from woman group to woman group. Some of them have children with them. Some of them have elders with them. They don't have guns. You get what I'm saying? They're like completely exposed out here on this landscape. They don't have the hunters with them. The hunters are off hunting, and this is women and elders and children. So they've spread out considerably, and Franz and I are having a hard time figuring out where they all are, but we have to go to every single group and interview each group. So I go to each one, and I ask the woman, can you please tell me where is the nearest lion? She's picking up marama beans. She just goes like this. She doesn't even look. And she says, and I say, ask her how far, Franz. And she explains to Franz how far. And it doesn't translate to meters or anything. But they're like, he's like, I'm like, how long is that? He says, well, it would take 5 minutes to walk there, kind of thing. You know, he explains. You know, like, interesting. I go to the next woman. You know, she's picking marama beans. I ask her where the nearest lion is. She immediately looks in the same exact direction that the last woman said. And she points in the same direction, and she says the same distance. And every single woman pinpointed the exact same spot on the landscape. And then we went and looked over there, and we found fresh lion tracks exactly where they said. And they're not trying to do this. You with me? They've grown up with this sensory rootedness and the need to pay attention. In their older age, they are rooted in this unconscious competence that is the ropes that I was talking about in another one of these sections, that they literally have ropes to the lion. They have ropes to the bird language. And they know a mongoose alarm. They know the difference between a mongoose moving on a landscape and what the birds are saying from a snake. Why? Because they need to. They need to know if it's an African wildcat or a leopard. They need to know the difference. Not because of themselves only, but because they are the ones with the children and they are the ones with the other elders who can't escape. So their whole investment is in early detection. their defense against things that are dangerous is knowing everything around them and where everything is at all times to the best of their possible ability. That's a fascinating skill to me. You can do it right now in modern times, and there's no reason not to. And there's benefits from it. It doesn't even take that long to practice this. You can cultivate this 10 minutes a day. Yeah. So I basically point at bird language as the root to this, because I think it's bird and animal language, but having the excuse to use all senses at once and having that role modeled, you know, by the elders and the older people, the older women, the older men, as being a really important thing to possess. These are really key. But the essence of it, the gateway of it, is learning to pay attention to the language of birds and animals. And this needs to be taught to children at a very young age. And it also needs to be taught to adults entering the art of mentoring communities for the first time. So again, it's a very, you know, Eastern door, first ring kind of thing. Everybody sit, listen, watch, pay attention. Everybody share the story of the day. Everybody share the story of what they observed or felt or heard, bringing as much of their sensory memory into their storytelling as possible. And that is the regulator of that rooted sensory capacity. It's that on-off switch for all your senses. What do I put in my storytelling? Do I talk about only what I see? Or do I talk about what I see, hear, feel, what I smelled? Bring all of your memory into your storytelling and awaken that sensory capacity. So that's the essence of the Northeast. The Ring One, the Northeast Shield, and that cultural element attribute. A long time ago, the lions ate a lot of us.